It's episode 300 of the E-Commerce Paradise podcast. Welcome, everybody. I wanted to thank you for tuning in, and also thank you guys for subscribing, anybody who's left a review of the podcast. Episode 300 is huge. It's taken me a few years to get here. And in that process, I've learned a lot, and I've also, you know, made a lot of mistakes, been through a lot of failures, and also had some great successes. And in this episode, I'm going to talk about some of that stuff, you know, what you learn over years of doing e-commerce in different ways, and, you know, basically running a lot of tests and experiments to see what works and what doesn't. All right, guys, so, you know, if you're looking to get started with high-ticket dropshipping, you haven't gotten my free niches list, go check it out at ecommerceparadise.com/niches. It's a list of the most profitable products for high-ticket dropshipping, specifically for domestic USA suppliers and high-ticket products. Go check that out. All right, guys, so, you know, it's been a long time here. I think I started doing the podcast originally back around 2016. Before that, I've been listening to lots of different podcasts, and I really wanted to start one of my own because I've been doing e-commerce since around, I don't know, 2004, 2005. You know, I got my start with e-commerce through a high school project to sell some old photography equipment, and the project was to learn how to take product photos, and then also, as part of that, was just list those products on eBay and sell them. So the teacher obviously had us use his eBay account, but he taught us how to take the photos, write a title, write a description, you know, set a bid, set a you know, like a minimum, and all that stuff. And the product sold, and I was pretty amazed at you know, I was able to sell something through an online bidding system like eBay. And you know, since then I started my own eBay account, and then you know, I through college years, I started selling all my old stuff from high school. A lot of trading cards I used to mess with when I was in my younger years, things like that. Would get me a little bit of money here, a little bit of money there, some collectibles, some video game equipment, stuff like that. And then, you know, moving forward, I sold used textbooks in college, you know, for a quick profit. And then I did a lot of kind of garage sale flipping stuff. And then eventually I, you know, wanted to start a business of my own, like a real business, not just, you know, have a side hustle, which is kind of like the natural progression I think everybody goes through. And, you know, I decided to go ahead and look at business models. And I started looking online, how to make money online. I learned about affiliate marketing, learned about drop shipping. I learned about, you know, Kindle publishing, and learned about, you know, private labeling and stuff like that. And my first inclination was private labeling. I wanted to create my own product. That would be really cool. And I'm a skateboarder, so it'd be cool to have a skate brand. So I tried doing that, but I didn't really have any funds to invest. So I decided to do it kind of bootstrap fashion, which is where you kind of create your own product, sort of like you would sell on Etsy. And I did some like spray paint stencils and stuff like that. And I spray painted some skateboard decks. And then never ended up selling any of those. Which is fine. And then I actually went to a friend who had a distributor of skateboards, a company, and he actually printed skateboards. So what you would do is you order these laminates from China, and they're only like a few cents each. You import them 100, 1,000 at a time, whatever. And then you'd use a machine, a big machine that actually heat presses the laminates onto the skateboard decks. And he had that machine in Canoga Park, California, which is where I stayed. And yeah, he printed me about 50 decks. And the money that I got from doing the garage sale flipping and stuff like that actually went towards that. So I reinvested my money into this brand. And I actually sold a few decks. It was pretty cool. I took it to a few skate shops. A few of them had them in there. A few of them sold. I sold some to some friends. I actually really went out of my way to try to build the business organically by sponsoring a whole team and, you know, filming them and stuff like that. And but by the end of the summer, this is around 2012, things didn't really take off. So I decided to shut it down instead of reinvesting more money into it because I didn't feel like it had much of a future. And I was talking to my business partner at the time about, you know, dropshipping more because, you know, he thought that there was a lot of opportunity in the bicycle space. So we started actually looking at bicycles instead of skateboards. And it's another thing that I've been doing since I was a kid. So it worked out perfectly. And yeah, we found a distributor and got an account with them and listed the products online, and eventually they started selling. Back then, things were a lot different. Different platforms existed. Shopify really was what it is now, but Shopify has grown a lot. And so I started using them instead of what I was using back then, which was a combination of WordPress and WooCommerce in a platform called eCreator, as well as eBay and Amazon, to sell these products. And the reason why is because Shopify has hosted e-commerce platform. So managed hosting is what I meant to say. Managed hosting is where they actually take care of the hosting for you. With You can have managed WordPress hosting now. It doesn't really exist back then. It was mostly shared hosting. It was what you have to buy, or, you know, your own private hosting server. Now there's like managed WordPress hosting. So it's a lot different now. You can start a WordPress WooCommerce site pretty simply. The only problem is that they don't really have everything built into it. You have to invest upfront a bit more to get everything you need to have a full-fledged e-commerce store, whereas with Shopify, everything's kind of built into it. So I made the switch from WooCommerce to Shopify somewhere around 2015 or 2016. I forget when it was exactly. It was like, I first tried it in 2014, and I kind of failed because what happened was my website had a lot of organic traffic to it, and I didn't do the proper link forwarding, URL forwarding to the new URLs before I launched the new site. And then I launched it, and of course I lost the organic traffic. And that was a big lesson learned, is that if you're going to switch your website, you got to make sure ahead of time you put the URL redirects in place. So I made that mistake, and I learned my lesson. So yeah, and it was good though, because later on I actually decided to sell the website, and the process of selling it was interesting. You know, the website had made a bunch of money for me anyways, you know, in 2014. I actually took a lot of that money that it made, somewhere around like $40,000 or $50,000 that year, and reinvested it into a physical brick and mortar bike shop. And I wanted to go like that, but I didn't really have a solid plan in place. I had two things I wanted to do. It was either make my own brand of bicycles and, you know, stock them there and display them, showroom them, that kind of stuff, or just be a retailer. And I looked at the upfront investment of having my own brand of bicycles, and it seemed really high. You know, obviously a bicycle can cost anywhere between $100 to $300, like a regular bicycle, directly from China, you know, or way more for higher, you know, for higher brands, stuff like that. I just wasn't really prepared to make that investment. You know, looking back in retrospect, that's probably what I should have done, is instead of going the route of retailing out of space, I should have just made my own brand and had a space for it there where I could have a showroom and then ship it out from there. That's what I really should have done. But that's okay. You know, hindsight is always 20/20. And what I ended up doing was taking the lower risk investment and just selling the brands I already had in a showroom. So it worked out for a little while. We made, you know, a bunch of sales and whatnot. But the problem was, is that it required so much upkeep and time that it really felt like I was back in a day job. So I decided not to continue with it. After about 6 months, I decided to, you know, sell the merchandise, shut it down, and go back to working from home. I thought it was a great decision. When I was back at home, I felt really good again. I didn't have to wake up and be at the shop at a particular time, that stuff. The problem with the shop, of course, is that you have to be there every day, or you have to hire employees. And hiring employees means paying payroll, having liability insurance, you know, all the overhead of a brick and mortar store. And there's a lot of different things that you don't really think about, you know. With having an internet business, you don't have to deal with a lot of that stuff. So it's pretty amazing how easy it is to have an internet business, whereas with a you know, brick and mortar, it's a whole another ball game, pretty much. So if you don't have to, what's the point, right? And these days, you really don't have to. You can just have an online business. You can even, if you want to private label your own products, you use a third-party fulfillment warehouse like Amazon, or there's a bunch of them, and they'll stock and ship your products for you. So you can do private label drop shipping. And yeah, it's just a leaner business model overall. And you know, you don't have to even hire employees. You could hire just virtual assistants in the Philippines. You know, they cost as little as like $2 or $3 an hour, and they'll do data entry for you and order management and customer service, stuff like that. So that's what I decided to do. I decided to go that route. But first, I wanted to sell my business. That was kind of a hard decision to make because, you know, it's the first business I'd really built up. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to build a similar business again because I had built it through content marketing. And you know, that takes a long time to build up a business through content marketing, organic links, things like that. In a market that was fairly unsaturated, it was pretty open to internet. And that's why I was able to get a foothold in there. So it was a simple niche at the time, you know, around 2014, 15. That's how I was doing so good. There's only a few competitors, you know. And so anyways, I decided to sell the website anyways, just because I really wanted to just get out of the stress. I was kind of beat up. My ego was kind of beat up after the, you know, failure of the bike shop. And I felt like I wanted to take a break, like take a year off, you know. So I decided to sell the business. I decided to go through Flippa, which was an interesting way to go because they brought a lot of people that were lowballers to my listing, and the lowballers were offering like $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. This business was making like $500,000 a year in sales and, you know, good 15, 20% profit margin. So it was worth a lot more than that, easily $100,000. And so I was thinking, okay, well, I want to get $100,000 for it, but nobody was offering $100,000 and nobody was offering anywhere close to it. in retrospect, I should have probably gone through an official business broker and done it better and, you know, then marketed it to a better clientele. I think I went with Flippa because it was a cheaper platform to go through. And that was a mistake, you know. So when you're going to sell your business, consider carefully where you go and sell the business, okay, what broker you use. Make sure that they have a network of people that are actually high net worth individuals that can see the value in a business, not just a bunch of low baller people with less money to spend, okay? Flippa is one of those places where you can sell websites for like $300 to $500 or $1,000 really easily. And websites do sell for more, but the problem is just there's so many users there. I'd say the vast majority are low ballers, and there's very few, you know, high net worth individuals. And they also have some really weird terms and conditions. You know, I found out about Flippa by accident was that I forgot my old login information, so I started a new account. And they actually have something in their terms and conditions that says that if you start two accounts for the same person, you actually get banned. Both accounts will get banned. And so now I'm banned from Flippa, which is really weird because, you know, I'm actually selling a lot of my own starter stores and done-for-you stores and, you know, actual cash flow in stores now in my own marketplace with E-commerce Paradise. So, you know, I'm cool with it. I don't really care. I just think it's funny. And those guys are, you know, obviously growing a lot. They kind of are becoming more like Amazon or Shopify in the sense that, you know, they are trying to control their platform and yet protect a certain, you know, subset of their customer base from unscrupulous people, like they think I am probably for some reason. And ironically, I've read a lot of forums and gotten some feedback from other people where they're actually protecting people that are scammers and scamming people out of stuff. So it's kind of a weird platform. I wouldn't really recommend going through there unless you're, you know, know what you're getting yourself into. You're going to deal with a lot of low ballers and you're going to deal with a lot of crap. So anyway, I would recommend a platform that's, you know, better for bigger businesses as far as selling your website, like FE International. Empire Flippers is also decent. There's a bunch of them, so go look them up. And yeah, so I sold my business. I actually ended up getting $50,000 for it, which is half of what I wanted to get. But it was a direct sale. It was outside of Flippa. I decided to go ahead and sell it directly. This guy wrote me directly and ended up not having to pay Flippa any kind of commission, which is great. It might be part of what they figured out later on. I don't know. And that's why they banned me. I don't know. They don't really say. They just kind of say, we can't really tell you why and blah, blah, blah. I was like, all right, whatever. Y'all are crazy. So, yeah, I actually sold my website. I was pretty proud of that fact. I didn't get what I thought I was going to get for it, but it was still, I think, a 15 or 18x multiple, which is decent. You know, it's a dropshipping business. You know, I don't have my own products, and the suppliers are up and down, you know, and in stock, out of stock. So it's definitely a difficult business to run. The guy who bought it was a Canadian guy and a really cool guy. But he made a mistake of hiring an Indian VA who was really bad at customer service, and I guess he dropped the ball on a lot of stuff, and I ended up getting some really weird feedback later on that, you know, like the website was a scam website now or something like that, so kind of crazy. But interesting, you know, story and whatever. So I ended up taking the year off and, you know, road tripping and stuff like that, having a good time. But I ended up kind of, you know, spending about half that money that year. And I got back to Los Angeles end of the year and decided I needed to, you know, figure out how to start another business again. So, you know, got a home again, settled down, home office, that kind of stuff. Because you can't really do a lot when you're out on the road, you know, obviously vacationing, it's not very productive. So I got a home office, started driving for Uber and Lyft just to kind of make ends meet, you know, pay the bills, whatever. And then actually the home office is in Long Beach, California, right next to a skate park and the beach. It was an amazing place. It was a house in the back of a big mansion. Like, Long Beach is built really interesting. I think originally it was just, you know, a place where like rich people were on the beach. And so they built a bunch of mansion style houses with like back houses for the butlers. And we were staying in one of the rooms in the back houses of a butler, butler back houses rooms. So that was funny, but, you know, it still costs like $1,200 a month or something like that. And, it was just like a little back house. And we ended up getting the garage downstairs eventually too, because there was like no parking on the street. But I was able to start working from there. I took a lot of courses on coding actually. I wanted to improve my coding skills in that time. And eventually I actually signed up for an online course because I decided, you know, instead of trying to just screw around, do things with content marketing again, I wanted to figure out how to use paid advertising and how to, you know, learn conversion optimization really good. So I signed up for the Dropship Lifestyle course with Anton Crayley and ended up I signed up because I knew he had a return policy. So I realized that, okay, well, worst case scenario, nothing happens. This course sucks. 30 days, I can get my money back. And I signed up for his course, and I was actually pretty decent. And I'm going through the course, and I'm thinking to myself, should I, you know, still get a refund? And I went ahead and got a refund still. I know it's kind of shady, sort of bad to do that. In fact, I hate it when people do that to me now. That's why I have a return policy. It doesn't allow that. But that's what happened. That's what I did. I was the kind of person I was back then. I wasn't the best ethical person. I'll admit my mistakes and failures. That was a bad move. Bad boy. But Anton was cool. He gave me a refund. And then I decided, okay, well, if this works in the long run and I actually get this website cash flow and I make enough money to buy the course, I'll buy it again. And I did actually. The site I built, it was so weird though, because what it was a similar niche to what I was selling before. And I was actually about to start a partnership with a guy to get outside of the non-compete agreement from the store that I sold so that I could sell it again. And right around that same time, that same week, that guy notified me he had resold the store. So the non-compete was now void. And that was pretty amazing timing. So I went ahead and started the store, started making money right away because it was still fairly non-competitive, and got going. It was great. Made money, bought the course again, paid Anton. So, you know, no harm, no foul, I guess. And, you know, I don't think he incurred any losses from that, which is fine. You know, I made good on my bad ethical decision. But so I got in there again. I networked with a lot of people. He actually had some free coaching available now at that point, which I purchased a second time. So I actually took advantage of that. I've been networking a lot and also looking at a lot of YouTube videos about becoming a digital nomad. So I started thinking about that and finally made the decision to actually kind of just start selling our stuff again. Move over to Thailand just to see what would happen. I saw a bunch of videos on Chiang Mai and how cool the place it is, how cheap everything is, how many people are there that are in the e-commerce space and you know, affiliate marketing, and just a lot of people that are doing the digital nomad you know, journey. And so decided to go ahead around May and buy a ticket, a one-way ticket, and go get a visa, a six-month tourist visa, multiple entry. And it all worked out. Ended up selling all the stuff, sold our cars and everything through an app called Shift, which was really nice because they took care of the actual car sale for us, got us a decent price on them, and sold all the bicycles, sold my motorbike, sold a lot of stuff, and got out of the apartment, and boom, went to Chiang Mai. So that's the end of 2016. It was a good time. Spent about 6 months out there, traveling around too. Went to Bali, went to Kuala Lumpur, Singapore, a lot of different places. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, started the podcast while I was out there too. That was the main thing. I think one of my first episodes was with Johnny FD, who does the Travel Like a Boss podcast. He's a big Chiang Mai guy. And back then I was a pretty big fan of his. You know, when I met him and actually got to know him a little bit, I became less of a fan of him because in person he's a bit different than he is on the podcast and, you know, online. So I think a lot of people are aware of this fact that, you know, he's just kind of keeps a tight circle around him. And, you know, if you're outside that circle, he's not like super friendly usually. So, you know, it's kind of just, he's short with people, which I can understand, like, I guess coming from his perspective or whatever, that, you know, the way he treats people or acts towards people, that he doesn't really know, which is fine. You know, I don't have a problem with that. But I just couldn't get along with him very well. And I was supposed to be in a business partnership with him. And, you know, when you're a business partnership with someone, you got to really like get along with them, you know? And I just couldn't. So I had to exit the partnership, and he got a little bit upset that I was exiting the partnership. And, you know, I can understand, I guess, but it was really weird. Like, he was kind of freaking out on me. And I was just kind of like, dude, like, this is not going to work out. So, we decided to, you know, I decided to end that, but I met a lot of cool people through him. Still stay in touch with them, a lot of them today. And, they're all, you know, really cool people doing different things now. So Chiang Mai crowd is really cool. It kind of felt like I was going back to university for a little bit, and, all the different meetups and stuff felt like a good networking event, and you learn a lot of stuff. It really felt like university. It was cool. Meet a lot of people around, you know, the Niman area, and, yeah, I still love Chiang Mai. If I ever go back there, I'll have a good time. I think they built up the city a lot since a few years ago, so I'm sure it's changed a lot in the meantime. I don't think Johnny's still there most of the time. I think he's out in other parts of the world now. So, you know, hey guys, just listen to the Travel Like a Boss podcast, I guess, if you want to find out what's going on with him, or read his blog. He's got a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, I just was never really into like the flaunting of the income stuff, you know, so it's a big turnoff for me. I don't really like doing that. And, you know, I've tried it in the past and it just gets a bad effect on my target market. I don't really like to do the whole flaunting of income stuff anymore. So I don't. And, you know, he still does. So that's why I just don't really, you know, like reading his blog anymore. but he's not the only one. You know, there's a lot of other podcasters that do that. Pat Flynn being one, he does income reports, but at least he doesn't like talk about like, you know, it's just the way you talk about your income that matters. You know, it's like you talk about, it's like, it's a lot of hard work and it's not easy. You know, that makes a lot more sense. Like, these are the particular programs I learned from, not like, hey, this is my life and yeah, this is working out, and kind of like everything's kind of a half lie. It's kind of weird. So I don't really like that. But besides that fact, our dropshipping stores are taking off really good. I actually hired a virtual assistant sometime in the spring, I believe, and then took off to Europe in that next summer, 2017. Had a good time in Europe. Came back and stayed in Bangkok this time instead of Chiang Mai. 2018 was in Bangkok the whole year. Worked to build E-Commerce Paradise podcast and built a membership site and a course. And now it is what it is. Because of everything I did that year, late 2018, I started offering done-for-you services, and now I have these like full business-in-a-box client packages that are doing really well. People are buying them, and we're building stores for people, and you know, they're doing good with them. So it's pretty cool to see. And a lot has changed since then. I'm in Bali now with COVID-19. I'm kind of stuck out here, and you know, just working a lot and building the business, you know, building the blog bigger. I'm actually outsourcing a lot now. I think I had like one or two VAs before, and now I have like close to 20 VAs doing different facets of my business, because it's growing a lot. You know, it's doing really well, and I'm reinvesting into growing the stores, I'm reinvesting into growing the blogs, and reinvesting into growing, you know, different things like Kindle publishing and YouTube videos and things like that. And I'm basically trying to remove myself from every facet of the business I possibly can, so that I can make it more of a business that, you know, anybody could run, right? Because if E-Commerce Paradise is just about me, then there's no way I can sell that business in the future, and there's no way I can consistently run it all the time, because it's always going to be about me. But if I can figure out a way to outsource the different things that I do in that business every day, videos, podcasts, blog posts, services, whatnot, if I can outsource all that stuff and hire teams and managers, it can become a much bigger business and a much more sustainable business, even one someone can invest in the future, and it would make sense. And that's kind of the goal. So the dropship stores are great because they don't require you to actually be that person, right? So it's not like you have to be the content creator. You can use an alias to make a dropship store. You can hire VAs to do all the work for you. You can create the automated marketing. You can have Fiverr gigs do videos for you, all that good stuff, right? That's why people are drawn to dropshipping. It's a business model where you don't have to be like the upfront character to make it run and make it succeed. And yet it can be very profitable, because you're basically taking advantage of your supplier's work to do product development and warehousing and fulfillment. And of course, marketing for their brand as well. So, you know, that's why I still do it. And I have a bunch of stores now. I got two that are doing quite well, one that's growing, and three more that I've just recently launched, and another like 10 or more stores that we're kind of putting on the back burner to launch maybe 1 month at a time, that kind of stuff. You know, it takes a lot of work to manage and run these stores. And I've hired, I think I have a total of 5 or 6 customer VAs now, customer service VAs, you know, so that I can have service around the clock, basically 24/7, 7 days a week. I have people answering the phones, replying to emails, you know, recruiting suppliers, things like that. You know, the Filipino VAs are great. I only hire people that are intelligent, have a good attitude, and have a good work, a good home office work environment, fast computer, fast internet. And also have a good, clean accent and, you know, can understand and respond to, you know, questions quickly, that kind of stuff. So I've hired a team of Bay players. You know, I've learned a lot of the hiring process in the meantime. And, you know, I know when I'm dealing with a B player, I can either demote them to just doing one specific little task in the business. And that's usually worked pretty well. If I like them, if they have a good attitude, they're just not as intelligent, then that's fine. They can just do one specific task and slowly learn more if they actually show, you know, that they want to do it. And that's happened before too. You know, people like come through and they actually improve themselves, but it's kind of rare. What I've done also is if somebody has a bad attitude, I let them go immediately. Because to me, attitude's number one. You know, if you have a bad attitude, you suck as a person. You need to learn better people skills. So I don't deal with people like that. If you have a good attitude and just low intelligence, that's fine. that's great. Just, you know, you need to work on one simple task. That's all. You know, that's something you're good at. Okay, if you have good attitude, great intelligence, everything, then I'll promote you. You know, you'll do your job really well. You'll make more money with me. And you'll rise into a position of maybe management eventually, and you'll train more VAs for me. That's the kind of way I build my teams. And, you know, I've learned a lot about people, and I've learned how to identify, you know, when someone has a bad attitude, and, you know, when somebody's intelligent, when I need to demote somebody, when I need to promote somebody. And I've really learned a lot about people management over the last few years. One of my biggest mistakes was just being afraid to hire people in the beginning, just because of my own lack of management skills. But really, the deal is you learn as you go. You know, you have to just hire somebody and work with them. And you have to, you know, do a phone interview with people. It's not that hard. You know, if you're going to be having them do customer service, it's utmost importance you do a phone interview. Just have a list of questions you ask them. And it's pretty simple. And just try to gauge their attitude and intelligence. You know, how quickly can they respond to your questions? You know, how friendly are they? And that just all that stuff makes a big difference, okay? Don't be afraid to hire VAs for your business. I think it's the most important thing. I think call centers are decent, but the problem with call centers is they can't do everything for your business. VAs are better in my mind because they can do everything for your business. The only thing about a VA is that if you just hire one VA and you have two calls come in at the same time, one of those calls is not going to get answered. So you're going to have to hire more VAs. And if you have a remote team and they're not working all in the same call center, then you have to have some online platform for organization so they can all share what's happening with each other. So I have like a I have spreadsheets set up, and I have Facebook Workplace, and I'm trying to figure out how to use Trello for my team as well so that everybody can share to-do lists and share with each other what needs to get done and whatnot. So it's been an interesting process. Team growth comes with growing pains, so you really have to like keep things organized as you go. What I've learned about the dropship stores is that, you know, building broader stores is definitely more upfront investment, more time, and also they don't usually convert as well on these really, you know, niche products. Okay, building specific niche stores almost always converts better, just because someone knows they're getting it from a really good source. You know, a store with one specific product category is always going to convert better than a store that's super broad. Okay, that's not necessarily true if you don't have the same conversion optimization thing. So you really have to look at the offer, and you have to look at, you know, the website speed, and you have to look at the copy and the description. A broad site that has really good offers, really good website speed, really good descriptions is probably going to convert better than a niche store that has no offer, no website, bad website speed, and no description. You know, obviously. So it just kind of comes with saying that if you have the same foundation of, you know, good marketing in place, a niche branded store is probably going to convert better than a big store. And the other thing about it is that building niche stores, they usually have less products, less suppliers, all that. Google tends to rank those stores better and actually index those pages as opposed to a big broad store, because when they look at a website, especially a new one, they're trying to figure out what that website's about. And so if you base it around one product category, then they'll know specifically what it's about. You know, and they'll rank a lot of your pages, you know. I had niche stores ranking on the first page of Google for long tail keywords, you know, within the first month. So it works a lot better for niche stores. Whereas with the broad stores, they don't really know what it's about, and you'll have a lot harder time getting new products to rank organically. So you're going to have to spend more on ads to acquire customers. That's just how it goes. So, but what I've done in the past and what I'm still doing is I have big broad stores just that I can recruit suppliers in a variety of different niches, and then I can create niche stores for those particular products and then, you know, launch them immediately and start getting more suppliers for each of those niche stores. And then if any of those stores I decide to sell in the future, of course, then there's that as well. I can sell them. So, you know, it's a strategy that's worked fairly well, and it's just a cool way to, you know, make an extra income from here or there. One thing I've learned about the whole dropshipping thing is you got to keep really good track of your expenses. You know, it's hard to keep a business profitable if you don't know exactly what you're spending money on. You know, advertising is one of those things that can really eat up your budget. Shipping costs can really eat up your profits. And merchant processing fees can eat up your profits. You know, there's other things too, like the different software programs you use and stuff like that. So just keep track of your stuff, either in a spreadsheet. There's accounting apps with Shopify now. There's one called True Profit. There's Accountify. Just make sure you use something where you're keeping track of your expenses, your ad spend. You know, you can put product cost into Shopify now, so you can see on the, you know, one of those apps dashboards what you made on that product, when you get the sale. One thing the merchant processors are doing now is they don't refund merchant fees when you refund an order. So we had to put in place like cancellation fees and extra fees for when people want to return merchandise beyond the restocking fee to recoup that 3%, you know, that they charge us. It could be a lot when you're selling a $5,000 item, 3%, you know, that's, you know, $150 or something like that. So it's a lot. And, you know, so there's that. Shopify is just like PayPal and Stripe. They don't refund the merchant fees anymore. So you just got to be careful and make sure you have, you know, you're only authorizing payments first and, you know, you capture them after they're for sure in stock in a ship or they're going to be pre-ordered. All right, so I've learned a lot in this process, guys. I covered some of it in this podcast episode. Episode 300 is kind of cool because I just wanted to go kind of back over my story and journey and how I got here and a few of the things I learned along the way of what works and what doesn't work. As far as lifestyle goes, what works really good is having a solid work home work environment. I used to just like stay in these little studio apartments and go out to coffee shops every day. And honestly, it sucks. You know, like the Wi-Fi is always crappy and the Wi-Fi and the, you know, you never know what's going to happen if you're going to get a good seat next to a power outlet or not. And so it's just way easier just to have a home office work environment where you work from every day. You know, get a coffee machine, make some breakfast for yourself, drink some juice. Don't drink alcohol, you know, because that stuff really makes you more tired than usual and it sucks. You know, eat healthy food because that's good. And go exercise, you know, get out of the house and, you know, go to the gym or whatever, go to the beach, go to the, you know, woods, go to the forest. For me, I go skateboarding, ride a bicycle, whatever, go running, do your thing, but get lots of exercise and stay healthy so that you can, you know, continue to run your business and the profits will pay for, you know, the lifestyle you want to live. The cool thing about it, of course, is you can live anywhere in the world you want to. So there's a lot of cool places you can stay. You know, you can go to Bali, you can go to Thailand, you can go to Portugal, you can go to Ukraine, you can go to Kia, you know, I don't know, there's lots of different places you can go. Some are more expensive than others. You know, a lot of people in America go to Mexico. You know, it's very cheap down there. Some are more safer than others, though. Like Mexico is not as safe. I would say Thailand's probably one of the safest places. Bali also is very safe. And I don't know how safe Portugal is. I've only been there once, but I hear it's really good. And yeah, so just make sure you do your research ahead of time. There's some great digital nomad networks out there. Just network with people, search it on YouTube, find out what place you want to go and go explore and have some fun. You know, you can do this business model while you're working a day job. I certainly did in the beginning. That's how I started. And it can be a pathway out of your day job. And then, you know, you just have to be responsible about growing your business consistently so that, you know, it provides you a solid income. And also be careful with your spending habits, your personal spending habits, because if you spend a lot of your income, you don't have as much to reinvest. And the best idea is always to reinvest your income. If you're doing really well, reinvest it, grow your business. You don't need to pay as much for advertising if you have a lot of content on your website and a really good offer. So always keep that in mind. It's best to reinvest in content and, you know, optimizing your website first rather than spending more money on ads. You know, ads, it's just traffic. So it may or may not convert, but just have a solid low budget ad spend in place and, you know, build your site really good and then it'll rank organically and it's more likely to get sales from the ads. Okay. And when you see, you know, niches that are trending, definitely put priority on those because those are the ones that are going to pay off really good. If you start having a lot of stock issues, be very careful. You know, customers can get upset, and if suppliers are out of stock for multiple months, you can get screwed over on a lot of different things. So, you know, you can always mark products out of stock and take pre-orders or just not take orders at all for them, not market them, that kind of stuff. It's really up to you. But I would always just make really good relationships with your suppliers so you can at least get, you know, be like top of their list as far as updates go for new products and when products are discontinued, things like that. There's automation apps for your store, but doing this high ticket dropshipping with different suppliers, it's very difficult for full automation. So we try to use, you know, some apps to automate stuff, but really I just use my team and to-do lists and tasks lists to make sure that things get done. That's basically the best way to have your business automated for you, in a sense, is just have people doing it for you. But with that said, if you know people are people and they get sick sometimes, whatever, so you have to make sure you have backup and you have to make sure you're constantly training new staff if you're doing really well so that you always have a big team that can back each other up, you know. people aren't computers. Even computers, crash sometimes, right? So software doesn't work, whatever. So you always have to have a backup. So make sure you have a backup plan in place. And, consistently build your business and you'll get there. You'll reach your goals and definitely have some goals. Obviously, if you don't have goals, you don't know what to do. You don't know why you're doing it. You got to have a why in place. And, for me lately, I've developed goals. I want to, have a goal of $30,000 a month of income. I want to be able to have a nice big mansion house here in Bali with build a skate park, have it in a nice nature area so that there's like places I can take my bicycle and ride a mountain bike. And I want to travel the world. I have a lot of different places I want to go. And I want to, experience some really amazing places. I want to go to nature and places I've never explored before. I want to go on trips and excursions and things like that. So, having these whys in your mind will help you not only to work more consistently and better, more efficiently, but also stay motivated. And also when you're done, you've made the money, you'll know what to go do with it. You don't just sit around and, think, oh, well, I have money now. What do I do? You'll actually go and do that thing you want to do. So, making a vision board is really cool. If you just, keep an to-do list, like a bucket list of things you want to do, that's great too. Research it, see how much it'll cost, and then try to plan it out. Of course, you can't really do a lot of traveling right now until coronavirus is kind of gone. So maybe just keep a bucket list and work your butt off for the next year or two. There's no excuses now to work hard because, not a lot of stuff is open. You can't really do as much now as you could before. So, it's a great time, if anything, just to hunker down and do a lot of work and get it done. And that's what I've been doing the last, 3-4 months. It's July now. This stuff started in end of, March. So April, May, June, the last 3 months, solid 3 months of just lockdown pretty much. And I've just been working my butt off. And it's been great, staying in Bali, at least some of the beaches are still open. And can go surfing. The skate parks are still open. Certain times of the day, a lot of businesses and restaurants are open. Things are a little bit different, but they're changing. They're improving. So getting better. So it's been a fun journey. 300 episodes. And my goal is to get 3 episodes per week. That's 12 per month. And 144 per year, or something like that. So, at that rate, I should be able to reach 1,000 episodes within, 5 years. So that's kind of my goal. 305 is like 800. So if I just do that plus a few more, maybe 5 or 6, 7 years. So, the goal is really to build this podcast to bigger than what it is. I want to start bringing on more guests, and I want to start bringing on more clients and students as well as success stories. But doing a lot of work requires a lot of energy. And so doing that requires a lot of energy. So it's kind of like tying up my time. So one of my ideas is, of course, outsourcing. I can do more of the stuff that is really cool for me to do. So that's the goal. And I hope you guys enjoyed this. And hope you guys set goals for yourselves and build your own businesses as big as you want. And enjoy your lives. Thanks so much for listening. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care.